Sarah Grillo here, coming at you with episode 6 of my podcast, What's Wrong with My Website? And today we are joined by my special guest, Kirk Days. Da-da-da-da! Hi, Kirk.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
What makes a good financial advisor website and what makes a bad website? I see some good financial advisor websites, but I also see my share of bad websites as well. And we're going to talk also about how to remediate issues really quickly on websites, because Kirk has an excellent technique for that. It's going to be really helpful to you advisors listening. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. By the way, please subscribe, review, and rate this podcast when you're done listening. So, Kirk, in your experience as a web person, by the way, Kirk is my website person, so all of you know. Kirk, tell us a little bit about your background just before we jump in.
Sure. So my story, I actually started everything with screenwriting. I went to school for that. I love telling stories. I love creativity. And from there, I landed some ghostwriting jobs, writing for online websites. Ultimately, it led me to working for different marketing agencies and ad firms and companies. Eventually, I launched my own marketing agency, Trios 51. We got a team of guys here.
Which I am a client of. And just want to tell you, Kirk is unusual because he's a technical person, but he has excellent communication skills. So when you call up with that panic, like, why isn't this working? What's wrong? Like, even last week, I'm like, Kirk, what's wrong with my podcast? Why is it not showing up on iTunes? Totally relaxed, totally responsive. He's not one of those kind of elusive, only speaks geek kind of person. Like, he's a geek, but he also has personal skills. Sorry to insult you.
No, I dig it. Yes, the guys love that. My web guys are very much to themselves and don't like talking to humans. So,
but you're human.
Yeah. They're really cool, but yeah, they're not. No, they're not always the
cool one. You're the cool one. That's why I'm still a client.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Kirk, so tell us, what, in your opinion, is an example of a website that will engage people? Because there's so many advisors out there that say, my website stinks, I don't know if it's working or not. How do you know if it's working?
Well, everything you do should be based on the data. So if you don't have Google Analytics installed, make sure you have it installed. It's free. There's videos out there on YouTube. You can even go to our YouTube channel and find stuff. You don't have to go to us. You can
just wait. What's your YouTube channel?
Just look up Trios 51 Google Analytics.
Treehouse 51 Google Analytics. Okay, because that's the first thing, Kirk, right there. Let's just pause. Financial advisors listening to this, do you have Google Analytics hooked up on your website? Because I can tell you that most of the time, and especially if it's a solopreneur or like a 3 or 4 person firm, a lot of these advisors just don't even know how many people are coming to your website on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And without that data, you don't know if it's working or not.
Yeah, that's 1,000% true. I mean, I would say at least 75% of the time, clients that we've worked with either don't have Google Analytics installed on their website, which is a huge no-no, or they do have it installed, but it's not firing correctly, so they have the wrong data. So you definitely want to take some time to check that out. It's completely free and it's very, very beneficial.
Yeah, you hear that? Financial advisors, free data. He said free, and it's data. You financial people that love free data and data.
Exactly.
Jump on the bandwagon right now. Okay.
The next thing is, not everybody has $1 million budget. Not everybody can afford to do something like just crazy out there and drop a bunch of money on AdWords and Facebook.
So tell us about it. Right.
Yes. So what do you do when that happens? What I recommend is find a website that you love and see how you can mimic it. And for me, the best website I have ever seen, hands down, is Amazon. Amazon spends millions of dollars in marketing. They fine-tune their whole funnel from what happens when you make a purchase to how they respond, to how you find products, to how they market to you. There's so much where I tell people all the time, go to Amazon and just click around and look at how they make their website, because there's so much you can learn from it. A great example is email marketing. When you buy something from Amazon, or if you don't buy something from Amazon, you're put on their email drip campaign. So I keep getting messages about a guitar that I saw on Amazon months ago, and I'm not going to buy it, But I'm like, oh yeah, eventually the dream will happen and I will get it. And thanks for reminding me.
Exactly. And that's the idea of the sales funnel.
Yeah.
That's also missing from financial advisor marketing most of the time. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, what happens there is usually these solar entrepreneurs, they don't have a budget for marketing, so you're not going to have a budget for a marketing team. So everything's on you to figure out. So how do you figure this stuff out? Don't reinvent the wheel. So Amazon's a great example of they're spending millions on it. Why don't just go on there, go through their purchasing funnel, go through their website, find things that they're doing and research it, learn from it, see how you can do it yourself and make that happen for your site.
Right. Okay. So why do financial advisors tend to not get leads from their website?
Usually, I think a lot of websites suffer from the same thing. One is they want things for free. They don't want to spend money on marketing dollars. They think like, okay, I have a website and now because I built it, they will come. And unfortunately, that's not the case anymore.
Why is that?
Right now, Google has over 300 ranking factors for your website. Over 300, and it keeps growing.
What does that mean?
So a ranking factor would be, do you have, for example, meta tags on the back end of your website? And this tells Google what your site's about. Stuff like that. Does your image have a title description? Do you have enough copy on your page? Do you have backlinks? Are you on social media? Are you mobile friendly?
And there's 300 of these.
Over 300 that we know of. So this is always changing. And it's really tough if you're in marketing to stay up to date on that. Imagine if you're not in marketing. Imagine if you know nothing about it, you're going to be like, wait, what? So what you want to do is you want to please Google as much as possible and cross all those T's as much as possible so that Google can index you better. And what that means is, let's say somebody's looking for a financial advisor in Anaheim, then you should be coming up in those searches. But if you don't do those things that Google recommends, then you're not going to come up in those searches. The basic things you can do are look if your website's mobile friendly. I'm willing to bet a lot of listeners right now don't have a mobile friendly website.
So how do you know what's the sign that your website is not mobile friendly?
What you can do is a couple things. One is look at the top of your URL and it'll say, for instance, www.trios51.com. All the way on the left side where the www part is it green or is there a red exclamation point? Look at that. Make sure you have like the right certification there. Number two is just pop open the website on your mobile device. And be honest about it. If you can't navigate on your phone, it's not passing the Google test. And it'll be pretty obvious. There's a lot of websites out there that candidly look like PDFs online, very dated. It's just really hard to navigate. It's really hard to find information. Things are like stretched across and you can't see it. So it's really easy to test that stuff.
Okay, so financial advisors, look at your website on your mobile phone. Okay, next item. What other things can they do?
Besides looking at like mobile, you want to make sure you have like Google Analytics. Another thing that Google loves is you're using their tools. So make sure you have Google Analytics installed. Make sure it's firing properly. Make sure you're using Google Webmaster Tools. This is another free tool. After you make all the changes to your website, you go to
Google. Hold on, Kurt. What if they don't feel like doing that?
So if you don't feel like doing that, what you can do is you can find a marketing.
Someone like you to do it?
You could find somebody like me to do it. Yeah, you could reach out to me or you could.
He's Google certified, by the way.
I am. So
I have good people on this podcast. This is not some kind of like baloney podcast, by the way, where I just get like influencers on to like do a keynote address during the podcast. Like I've actually worked with this person, everybody. Okay. So it's not like this is some like quack, you know what I mean? Like, he knows what he's doing. Okay.
Thank you.
You
can hire somebody. You can reach out to us. You can do it yourself.
How do you know if a website person is a good person? Because I think all the advisors on this podcast will agree that they've had their fair share of website people that just did not hold up to what they thought they were going to be. Like, what are some signs in advance that the website person's not a good person?
Okay, there's certain things you have to look for. The first thing is you get what you pay for. So always remember that. Right now, we're living in an era where everybody's outsourcing to India. they're looking at Fiverr, Upwork, freelancer.com, these type of websites where they can get somebody to do PPC marketing for you, for your company, for $5 an hour. That's a great deal. It's like, wow, $5 an hour, you're going to do all this stuff for me? Yes, let's make that happen. And then they get into your website and your website's broken. Eventually you come to us and then we fix these problems. So you get what you pay for.
Time. Yeah. The other thing is, sorry about Fiverr, and I don't mean to bash Fiverr at all. I've had good experiences on them and bad experiences on Fiverr as well. But there was one time when I wanted them to make a video, like a little funny little video to use as a follow-up with somebody. And they sent me this video and it was like, had all these kind of like animated little characters in it. And I was like, you know what? Do I have the rights to this now or do they? It's weird, right?
Like, yeah.
How do I know who has the rights to this? I'm buying this for $5?
Right.
Weird.
Right.
Like, if I have someone on Fiverr do a logo for me for $5 or write something for me for $5, how do I know that they didn't just for like extraordinarily cheap? How do I know that they just didn't cop that off somebody else? And now, like, who do I go to? Whose throat do I choke?
I mean, Fiverr has this thing now. Before, like, everything was $5, and now they have different plans where it's if you want the rights to this, it's $20. And not every seller does that, but
it's like
some
a big switch.
Yeah, there are some sellers that do that. Like, if you want to use this on YouTube, well, it's $20. If you want this on your website, it's $20. So, but yeah.
Not to talk bad about Fiverr. We don't want Fiverr, you know, having a Twitter attack on us or anything. Maybe we do. They probably have a lot of followers. Yes, Fiverr.
Yeah.
Yes, Fiverr. Grillo Invest is my handle on Twitter, okay? Okay, go ahead.
So you have to be careful about those things where I completely understand not everybody has a huge budget. I get it. So sometimes you will find like great people on Fiverr. I have. But you have to take the necessary steps. Talk to them. Have a conversation. Look at their reviews. Look at their testimonials. On Fiverr, I think the testimonials are kind of bogus. Other websites do a little bit better because you can see more of the work they've done, more of their portfolio. Other things to look at besides that, let's see. So look at the testimonials.
Look at work that they've done maybe?
Yeah, look at work that they've done. Ask for like samples. Not everybody is going to have like 100 samples too. So that's the problem. If you're looking for reasons to say no, there's a lot of reasons to say no. So, but you can say like, do you have any testimonials? Do you have any samples? Do you have a portfolio?
And see, here's the thing. Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing I just want to add about that, Kirk, is that a lot of times advisors ask me for samples of websites that I've written the content for.
Right.
Right. So, and by the way, that's how I originally met Kirk, because Kirk was the website person and I was the content writer for a client that we both had together.
Yeah.
So that's how that kind of works, right? So the advisors always say to me, do you have a sample of a website that you've worked on? Yeah. Okay. I do. But a lot of times I didn't write every single word on that website, because even if I did, what happens is inevitably somebody from the company comes along and they want to change something. So sometimes they change it.
Yep.
It's out of my control.
Yep. That happens more often than not. That happens.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, is that it can be a little bit like financial advisors. When you're checking somebody out, just keep in mind that the website that they put in front of you, like, don't be so just trusting and take it and assume that they've done every single piece of work on that site that is the craft that you're evaluating them for. Because a lot of times, like I said, there's other players that come to do work that are involved.
One thing I'd recommend doing that we do when we're bringing on developers, we never bring on anybody who says they're an expert. In this world that we live in, like, if you go to these freelancer profiles, everybody's an expert. I'm an expert at AdWords. I'm an expert at Twitter. I'm an expert at Facebook. Then why are you on Fiverr? It just doesn't make
sense. Ooh, edgy comment, Kirk.
Well, it's 100% true. So, us, we try to find people who are learning, understand, like, there's so much out there, like the Google thing. There's so many things out there where you can't be an expert at this. You can't. So,
right. So tell me the bug squasher story. Now, I already know it, but just tell the advisors that are going to listen to this, what is the bug squasher story?
Sure. So with Trias 51, our bread and butter tends to be making websites for clients. And about 10, 11 months ago,
I forgot my password.
Yeah. It was an issue on the website. I forget if it was like a word or something wasn't working on a page. Or I don't even remember what the problem was. But I just remember it was like this one thing on one page for this entire website. It wasn't a small website. So I had to send her a message to help diagnose the issue. I had to say, what URL are you looking at? And that was like the worst thing I could have said in the world. It made just things so much worse than what they were. She got really frustrated with me. And
then she wrote you a 20,000 word email?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she ended up calling me and she was like, why don't you know this stuff? Why don't you? And okay. I was like, and I was trying to ask her like other questions. Like,
okay. It was a mess. Okay. So.
Yeah. So it was bad. And so then I had to tell the guys, cause I'm like, guys, you got to fix this. And I'm telling them the story and like, I'm crying inside and they're like, okay, yeah, we've heard this story before, different variations of it. And then it just hit me when I was telling them, I was like, you know, I wish there was a way we could get all this information from clients without having to really talk to them and put them on the spot. Like maybe she has a point. Maybe she doesn't need to know this stuff. What if it was on us to get that stuff?
That's a tweetable moment. Tweet.
Yeah. So that's how it all started, where I thought like, you know, I wish there was a way we could, a user could go to the website and just take a screenshot. And from there, I could tell you what URL it is, what type of device they were on, who the user was. I could tell you their IP address and they could leave a note on there. Hey, change the image, change this copy, this form's broken. And it all started with that. And then it just blew up because once we started doing that, we tested it internally on a couple of our clients. And then the way that my mind works, I was like, okay, well now we need a reporting function for this. So let's build a reporting tool. And now I want to assign tickets. I want to assign bugs to certain people on the teams. So let's create some team part to it. And it just kept growing and growing and growing. And then we were like, okay, I think we got to go live with this. We got to share this. So the Bug Squasher is intended to help you diagnose issues just really, really easily. No hassle, no fuss, just a click.
So it's what, like a financial advisor does this?
Anybody can use this tool. So the way that it works is you go there, you sign up, you get a line of code, and you need to be able to put that line of code on your website.
Once it's there. Someone like you do it for them?
Yeah. I could do it for them.
Okay.
A five person could do it for them. We also have guides on YouTube and on our website. So you can like check out those videos to tell you how to do it too. You add this to your website and then the next step is like, okay, who's managing this? Is it your developer or is it you? And either case doesn't matter. It's on your site. You can hide it from the public, which is a feature that I'm like super stoked about. And what I mean by that is, in the perfect world, you never make changes to your live website. You never touch it. That is the dream scenario for a developer. That's not reality. In reality, the client has a live site and there's no budget for a development site. So that was a hurdle that we were like, we need a solution where we can put this on your live site and only the people you want see this tool. So we have that function in there in the Bug Squasher where you say like, okay, I want this IP address to see the tool and only this IP address, which means if you're like Amazon getting thousands of visits a day, those 1,000 people wouldn't see it, just the team that you want.
Okay. So listen, Kirk, I think we're just about out of time here, but thank you so much for being on the podcast. I think this was really useful. So financial advisors, I always end every podcast with some takeaways so that this is not a motivational podcast where we're going to walk across the hot coals at the end. This is, this is practical. And I'm going to give you some homework because if you don't have enough things to do already, but you did come to my podcast for a reason. And that was to hear, I almost used the word expert advice, Kirk, but I can't use that word now because you said not to.
Oh, yeah. Don't call me an expert.
So for homework, the three things, advisors, that I want you to do are look at three websites that are better than yours. Like Kirk was mentioning, he loves Amazon. Find your three sweetheart websites and think about what you like about those. And how can you somewhat replicate that on your own website? The other thing is get Google Analytics hooked up. If it's already hooked up, you need to start looking at it once a week and do that for the next like 2 months, okay? And do a little bit of an assessment on where are you losing traffic? Are you converting? Are people clicking the Contact Us page after they look at the About Us page and after they look at the services page? Or what's the flow of the traffic? Okay, understand the data, like Kirk was saying in the beginning. And the other thing is, and this kind of relates to what I do a little bit, but think of some ways to actually get that website in front of new people. Do it for 10 minutes this week. Take 10 minutes and say, you know, maybe something I haven't done is I haven't put my website in the signature of my email. Maybe I should try that and see if there is higher traffic. Because sometimes, you know, people that don't know you and they get an email from you, sometimes they'll kind of go to your website. Or it might be like, hey, you know what? Maybe my website's not in the contact information field of my LinkedIn profile. Maybe it should be there. Is my website on the company page of my LinkedIn company page? If you don't know what these terms are, financial advisors, then let me know because we can schedule a consultation. Or you can go to LinkedIn Help. But you definitely should know the ways to get your website out there because there are a lot of ways you can do it for free. And it's a great opportunity to get more traffic and get that data effect going on. So thanks everybody for listening. Sarah Grillo Podcast, Kirk Days, my special guest. Kirk, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Okay.